Crowhill here from Beer in Conversation with Pigweed and Crowhill. Today we review a dark ale and talk about systemic racism. Hello and welcome to Beer in Conversation with Pigweed and Crowhill. Good evening, Pigweed.
Good evening, Crowhill.
So what's on your mind today?
Oh, boy, that poor Ben Shapiro just can't keep up with
me.
Yeah, he's slipping.
He's slipping?
Yes. I think, for all this time, I caught him in a faux pas.
Caught him in an error? Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, it took a little while.
I sure had, and I haven't caught one since.
Yes.
But, yes, so we're going to talk about systemic racism. And as he was making his points, he was calling it systematic racism.
Okay.
Which would be what?
Yeah. So I think systemic means it's throughout the whole system.
Yeah.
Where systematic would mean you're doing it in an orderly way.
Right. See, that's what I thought. It's like, I'm not sure how you would systematically be racist. Like, you go from, you're always racist in a certain way. Start in the morning, have racist breakfast, then I drive my racist car, and whatever.
Put on your racist hat. Yeah, right. Yeah, okay. All right, so poor Ben Shapiro. Ben Shapiro is a remarkably intelligent fellow.
Yes, and he thinks on his feet faster than he speaks, which is the fastest person. I always think I'm listening to a podcast at that 1.5 speed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just
it's just regular speed. Yeah.
Yeah. Right, yeah, and it's like his mouth can still barely keep up with his brain.
So. I know, it's pretty astonishing. All right,
but so, I got you, Ben.
Yeah, yep. Okay, so we're gonna try this strange thing that I found.
It is weird.
At good old Total Wine. It's a 22nd anniversary ale by Schmaltz Brewing, and it's called 22nd Anniversary Dark Ale. 11 malts and 11 hops and 11% alcohol, which is why we're splitting this.
Okay. I kind of thought I was just getting shortchanged. Like, now I get it.
No, yeah. So this is the pint, so we got 8 ounces each. But that's...
Why does it say it's not 22 ounces?
Well, apparently, I think they'd done their previous ones in 22-ounce bottles.
Oh, and they're like, all right, we're not giving you 22 ounces of 11%.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because we don't want to have that liability on our hands. Celebrating 22 years of delicious beer and delicious... Shtick.
From somewhere?
Schmaltz Brewing in New York.
All right.
Clifton Park, New York.
Clifton Park, New
York. All right.
Well,
so, what do we got here? Ooh, my goodness.
Smells
boozy.
It smells dark and smells hot.
It does. Yeah, okay. Ah, wow.
Oh, boy, it's both, and it's good.
That is good. That's like a Christmas beer.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you just get a single, or did you get a four-pack?
I just got a single. But I'm going to go back and get a 4-pack and store this away for Christmas, because this is exactly what I want to drink, you know, when I'm waiting for Santa.
Yeah.
That is,
that's the tree thing. Is up, snow's falling.
Yeah, exactly. And the cat's sitting in your lap, and you're sitting there, presents are all wrapped, and you're waiting for Santa and ready to go to sleep. And
right.
This
now
is,
you're right.
You want to take a sip on one of these guys.
Tie one on, but so you're not up when Santa comes.
Mm-hmm. Right, I mean, you wouldn't want to do that. Much as I'd like to see the old fellow, but, you know, you can't do that. That's not the way it works.
I don't know why. Try.
All right. So one of these days I'll tell you my Santa story, but not today.
All right. So let's hold on. Let me back up one here. Last week we did a critical race theory.
Yes.
And I kind of broke it into 4 parts, and we only got through part 1.
Yes.
And then I thought, well, okay, we'll make up for it next week, and we'll run through the other 3. Well, from what I can see, we're only going to get through part 2.
Okay.
So this is going to be a 4-parter, and that's all right. We're in no hurry, because it's not going away anytime soon.
No, I mean, every day we get assaulted with our whiteness and with, you know, the fact that we're oppressors and that white silence equals violence. And, I mean, all this stuff is thrown at us all the time.
So
I mean,
we're going to get to the root of what are they actually talking about. So we spent an entire show defining critical race theory,
right?
Which I don't. These other 3 parts, which is systemic racism, and more specifically, riot-wise, that the police, the system of policing and criminal justice is inherently and intentionally racist.
Okay,
and then the other aspect of it is that outcomes should reflect percentage of population.
Yeah, so that's something that's come up again and again.
That
and again.
Is. So these are going to be their own shows, so yep. We'll get to them whenever we feel like it.
Okay, so systemic racism is today's topic.
Can you give me a definition that I got from somewhere.
Here's the definition. A social structure in which public policies, institutional practices, cultural representations, and other norms work in various, often reinforcing ways to perpetuate racial group inequity. It identifies dimensions of our history and culture that have allowed privileges associated with whiteness and disadvantages associated with color to endure and adapt over time. Systemic racism is not something that a few people or institutions choose to practice.
Right.
Instead, it has been a feature of the social, economic, and political systems in which we all exist. Okay, now my reaction...
go ahead, what's yours?
So my reaction to this is
quickly.
So first of all, obviously, there have been racist practices, policies, institutions, whatnot, in the past. Certainly true. It seems like we have gone to extreme efforts to root that stuff out. It's now unlawful, and if anybody had a racist policy or practice, it's going to go to court, and it's going to get shot down.
Yeah, if you can identify it, then, yeah, it will be corrected.
Yeah. So, if we're talking about this kind of like this ghostly mirror image of systemic racism that's still out there somehow, I don't quite get it, because we've already said no, you cannot discriminate against on the basis of race, and courts are regularly shooting things down, sometimes in my opinion on kind of flimsy grounds, but still we are very carefully making sure that there are no racist policies in the country, and we've been doing that for decades,
right? Which is what makes this definition and every other definition I've heard so amazingly vague.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like, all right, so what do you mean? You heard that bit of gobbledygook that you said is about as clear as they can get.
Yeah.
And it's not clear at all.
Yeah.
So it's something that is going on at some throughout the system. So I'm wondering, you mean, is it in the postal system?
Yeah. Can you point to it? Can you show me an example?
Is it the Department of Transportation and the FDA and the library system and the Social Security Administration? I mean, so every level, and those are government systems.
Right.
And then non-government systems, all churches, institutions like marriage.
Right.
I mean, is it everywhere? Or do you have to...
Because you need to tell me
which ones, where it is. No. It's just everywhere. Yeah. Trust me.
So let's say, just for example, that black people or Asian people or somebody had a harder time getting married than white people. Okay? Wouldn't that immediately go to the court and they'd say, cut this out?
You mean if within the institution of marriage, they were not allowing...
Yeah, like they were saying, look, you know, white people, you can get married in 3 months, but black people, you got to wait 5 months.
Whatever
it was, wouldn't we identify that and then say, you know, you can't do this, right? So what exactly is, I guess, the problem with systemic racism is they're not identifying anything tangible or real that we can put our finger on or say, okay, here is what we mean. We mean this thing. You see this thing that's happening? That's racism. And the problem is, if you were to identify something and said, look, here's this thing, this is racist, then we look at it and say, yeah, that's racist. We should stop doing that.
Okay, well, let's address that.
Yeah, let's quit doing that.
But I see nothing from BLM, critical race theory, the justice system, the outcome, where they define the problem and the goal.
Yeah.
Or any problem and any goal.
Right. And especially since in critical race theory, they say that racism is always with us anyway.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what's the goal? I mean, if racism is always going to be with us...
Right. So, yes, because it's so deep down that even you don't know where it is. So if you can't... How are you going to root it out?
Yeah.
If you can't... If you're unable to see where it is, mm-hmm. and it's all this feeling and anecdote, and I know it when I see it.
It becomes just this sort of this sort of mystical thing that hovers in the background. And it's very strange.
It's just used as a, I don't know what, as a, I don't know, as a cudgel and an excuse weapon.
Yes, it is an excuse. But if you think about it, there are a lot of systems in place that are putting forth extraordinary effort not to be racist. They're trying very hard to find, put women in STEM.
Well, they're trying very hard to being counter-racist. They're actually...
that's a bad example, obviously. But they're trying to put minorities in STEM. They're trying to put minorities in...
Oh, my God, did you see the new standards for the Oscars? The Oscars have been unwatchable for years.
I've never watched the Oscars.
I've never had either, actually. Yeah. You know what I do? I always do the next day. Mm-hmm. I would go to the website, and then I would say, oh, best picture. All right.
Maybe I'll watch that one day.
Yes, because I don't need to see Hollywood four times a year telling each other how wonderful they are.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway.
Yeah, so I've never seen it. But yes, now they've decided that the results have to be fit into certain boxes. Right?
Well, we already got this. The last four Oscars were all about checking the most boxes of...
Wokeness.
Of identity, of identity. So the last time we had, black, trans, something, overcoming their struggles. It's like, you know, before the Oscars even comes out, you're like, all right, well, that one's got four boxes.
Right.
I think we've decided what the best movie is.
Yeah, it becomes self-defeating. Because when you know that something got Best Picture because of identity politics and wokeness... then you now don't really believe that it was the best picture.
Right. But you know what? Why don't you be upfront about it and have your own... I mean, they already do it five times a year, People's Choice and the mm-hmm. SAG and the... just have the... Well, not the Woke Awards. I don't want to be insulting because you can do it if you want. The Justice Awards.
Okay.
The film that...
The Diversity Awards, whatever they want to... Yeah.
Okay, you do that. But leave the Oscars alone for actually the best people.
Mm-hmm.
And if all of the best directors are white men, sorry, ladies and whoever else,
yeah.
This is the best picture that was made that year. So that's,
although to tell you the truth, even if they didn't, I'm not going to watch it. So.
No, I'm not. But at least I gave it some validity before, and I would actually put that on the top of my Netflix list. Now I'm like, all right, 12 Years a Slave. Is it really the best picture, or, you know, did they just check all the boxes? Yeah. So the thing is, you say that there is no standards, there is no proof, there is no that. I challenge you, young man, with a video that is systemic racism explained.
Yes.
Well, and if I could read one user comment before you get to it.
Okay.
It says, this is a Sesame Street level of simplification of an extremely complex issue, but unlike Sesame Street, this is made to be taken as first-rate scholarship for adults, which is insulting. So, it's a little cartoon.
Sesame Street at least has, you know, Grover and Cookie Monster and Big Bird and, you know, all those fun guys.
And all we have is Kevin and Jamal.
I know. Okay. So, I watched the video.
I did too.
And it made a bunch of claims. And it's a well-produced video. But... the claims don't seem to stand up to me. So one claim was that schools are funded by property taxes, and blacks live in poor neighborhoods, so their schools are underfunded.
Yeah.
And my reaction is, yes, that's true. So why don't we, first of all, everybody knows that throwing money at schools doesn't solve the problem anyway. So let's just dispense with that silliness. Now, I'm not saying that they shouldn't have better funding. They should. But throwing money at schools doesn't solve the problems. But if you want black kids to go to better schools, then why don't you adopt the Republican proposals for school choice, school vouchers, charter schools, homeschooling? Which party is doing that?
Yeah.
Right? Actually, the Republicans are the ones who are pushing school choice, school vouchers, charter schools, homeschooling, private schools. So if we really want to get blacks out of these bad schools, and I absolutely do, let's do it that way. How come the Democrats have a lock on doing it the way we're doing it right now, which perpetuates this situation that they're calling systemic racism? they're calling it systemic racism and then going out and voting for Democrats anyway. I mean, come on.
So Baltimore schools spend $16,000 a year per student.
Wow.
The school the student population is 80% black. It's the fourth highest rate in the nation. It was under a Fox 45 TV news program.
Yeah.
Found that six city schools, not one student scored proficient on either English or math. Wow. And 13 city schools had zero students proficient in high schools, had zero students proficient in math. The highest is Detroit, $18,000 per student. They had 93% not proficient in reading and 96% not proficient in math.
So by all means, so, let's give them more money.
So money is the problem. So no, what's happening is all of the money is getting siphoned off to the white schools. Which white schools?
Oh. Is that true? I mean, Baltimore, these Baltimore schools are...
yeah, there aren't any white schools in Baltimore, public
right.
schools in Baltimore.
And they're getting $16,000, and that's not enough?
Well, I don't know if this is not enough, but it's obviously not a correlation between performance and dollars spent,
which is what the
video was saying.
Yeah.
Is that if they only had enough money, if they only had the same amount, if Jamal's school had the same amount of money spent that Kevin's school did, then, you know, then they would perform better. But what about this? What if you just took all of the kids from Jamal's school and they swapped the kids and you left the schools and the teachers in place? Would you get Kevin's school level performance out of Jamal's kids? I would say that there's a lot more has to do with the student's home life.
There's a lot of other factors
that
going
has to do
on.
With than how fancy their Erlenmeyer flasks are.
Yes, there's a lot of other things going on that don't have much to do with how much money is being spent. For example, are the kids being taught to read at home before they go to school?
Yeah,
right. Which is a very fundamental thing. Are they being encouraged at home to do their homework? So there's so many other...
Right. Are they coming to school, fed,
had
with
good
their
night's
glasses,
sleep.
A good night's sleep, and their homework done?
Yeah, right. If they were doing that, they would be performing so much better. And
the other thing, like the charter schools, a lot of these things depend on a level of parental involvement in the school. A lot of times they require certain hours of volunteerism. So it has more to do with the kind of... parents, the people that don't have the discipline and drive are the people that don't make a lot of money, who live in the neighborhoods, who are raising the kids.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And to just look at it and say, this is an example, black performance is because we don't spend enough money. Well, one, we've already shown that it's not a money issue.
Right. We are spending enough money, but that's not solving it. And as Candace Owens pointed out in her interview with Ben Shapiro recently,
that was wonderful.
She said, look, when she was in high school, she had a Japanese friend, and she went over to her house one time, and she was, like, scared of her dad. You know, as soon as they come in, it's like, have you done your homework? Sit down, do your homework. You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, Asian kids outperform blacks and whites.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason is they have a culture that emphasizes education. On Saturdays, they're not out goofing off. They're preparing for tests.
Yes.
You know, they have a culture that's very focused on doing your homework, succeeding, doing well, and so
the dad comes from Korea with nothing,
mm-hmm.
opens up a store in a neighborhood where nobody wants to open up a store.
Mm-hmm.
The kids are either working in the store, doing homework, or playing violin, and one generation later, they're in MIT.
When I was working at Shoe Town, when I was a lad, there was a tailor, a little inside the mall, there's this little booth where there's this tailor.
Yeah.
And every single day, the Korean lady who ran the tailor shop, her daughter would be there with her, helping out in the store. And when she wasn't helping a customer, she was doing her homework. And that's all she did the whole night. You know, she wasn't wandering around the mall getting some,
Orange Julius.
Right. She was doing her homework or she was working in the company business. And so, this idea that the schools are not funded properly, well, as you pointed out, it's not necessarily true in all cases, and additional funding doesn't help anyway. Maybe there's another explanation.
Yeah.
Okay.
What about hiring. What is the hiring?
Hiring where? What?
That given the same education level, Kevin is going to get hired over Jamal.
Oh.
I would say, I mean, maybe some mom and pop somewhere who would rather, hire a white friend's son than Jamal. But any place with an HR department, if they are equally qualified, I'm telling you, Jamal's getting the job.
Yeah, so in the places that I've worked...
I mean, an actual corporation?
If you had equally qualified candidates, and one was a minority and one was not, they'd hired the minority.
Yeah.
So I think... I'm not so sure how... Now, there have apparently been studies that show that if somebody has a name that sounds a minority name, that they're less likely to get hired.
No, that wasn't it. They were less... This is where it falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
It was less likely to get the callback.
Right.
So they already know your race.
Hmm.
You've already come in for the first interview. It's less likely to get the callback. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I mean, if I'm down to a few people and my choices are Black Charles and Black Chaiquan,
mm-hmm.
then I'm going to read into that some sort of cultural upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, probably particularly if I was a black boss,
mm-hmm.
looking into that, and I'm going, I'm guessing, and you don't even think it in your mind, I'm guessing Charles is probably more middle class than Chaiquan from a better family, and I'll go with Charles. But it didn't say to get the job.
Oh.
It said for the callback.
The callback.
And where it was worse is they made it sound like it's 50% more chance. Like, one guy's got a 75% chance to get the job, and the other guy's got a 50% chance to get the job. But the numbers were, where statistics are nuts, the numbers were like 6.5 and 10.5. Right, so the numbers are already super low.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so the other way to look at this is whether the question is really a matter of race or whether it's a matter of class.
Yes.
Because apparently
that's where the Charles and Chaiquan come from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the question of looking at a name and judging somebody by a name doesn't necessarily mean that it's a race distinction. Uh-huh. It could be something else.
Well, how about Bradley and Bubba,
mm-hmm.
right? Two white guys,
right?
Yeah,
you might. Hey,
they call me Scooter. Like, Scooter.
Right.
Not really.
Yeah.
Scooter environment here, so we're gonna go. There you go, Scott.
Right. I think that's fair. So, another claim in this video is just the claim that a lot of these problems are a result of systematic racism and. Systemic racism, sorry. I pulled the bench.
I know. Well, now I got to think about it each time because Ben stuck it in my head. I never had a problem with it before.
Yeah. So does that mean that all institutions are racist, or does that mean that all inequality is explained by racism?
Right? Yes. 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 Well, that's we're going to do a whole show on that one.
Yeah.
But that's exactly what the claim is. And so all you have to do is look at the numbers, you know, and you go, huh. There aren't 13% astrophysicists here.
And we're not allowed
therefore, astrophysicism, physics is itself inherently racist, even though I'm not saying any of you guys are.
And we're not allowed to look at any other characteristics, like the absence of fathers in the home, or, you know, whether kids are being encouraged to do their homework, or any of those other
things. Or whether 93% aren't proficient in math.
Right.
You're not going to be astrophysicist.
Right. So another claim in this video is that redlining blocked off black neighborhoods from investments. But redlining has been illegal for like 40 years or something, hasn't it?
Exactly. So this is a term that I've found useful,
mm-hmm.
called fast-forwarding.
Mm-hmm.
So all you do when you say you've got a problem in this area, you go, in policing, you go, do you know how many people were lynched between 1863? You're right. It's like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you're taking something that a racist event in the past and you fast forwardly project it into the present and you go, see? You go, okay, yeah, but this is 2020, you know.
Yeah.
No, there's no redlining. There's no, you think that there are banks that go, you know what? This guy is not a credit risk. We can make money off of him. But, you know, he's kind of dark.
Right.
Right? So,
so there have been, definitely been situations in the past. Like, for example, let's look at the Asians in America. Asians were clearly discriminated against in America early on. You know, when Asians were used as cheap labor to build the railroads, yep. right? And they were very badly discriminated against. But
were they given citizenship, or were they shipped back home when they were done building the railroads?
That's a good question. I don't really know. but nobody today is blaming Asians' situation on that discrimination back then.
Yeah.
Irish, when they came to America, were badly, people would put up signs in the store windows saying no Irish need apply.
Right.
Because everybody thought
no
of the dogs, Irish.
No dogs, no Irish.
Yeah, right. Everybody thought of the Irish as drunken bums, and they weren't any good, so we're not going to hire them.
The Italian Mafia was born out of anti-Italian racism.
Right.
Where they kind of pulled themselves together. but that third generation of Italians, by the time the son was there, he's moved out of New York City. He might still be a mobster, but his son wasn't. His son went to college.
Yeah. So the fact that there was some clear discrimination in the past,
yeah,
doesn't necessarily allow you to transfer it up to the present. If you want to try to make that case, then you need to show the mechanism, show how that's really happening, because we can show you several examples where there was very clear discrimination in the past, and there isn't any discrimination any longer.
Yeah.
So
banks want to make money, and yeah. they're not assuming that you're a credit risk because you're black.
Mm-hmm.
They want to see your credit. Have you shown a pattern of paying your bills back?
Right.
Can we make money off this guy?
So another claim in the video was that Kevin is going to be able to go to better universities than Jamal.
Ooh,
well,
I challenge that.
Yeah, I'm not really sure that's true, because universities are eager to bring in more minority
yes,
students.
Yes, in fact, there are lawsuits because of the discrimination against Asians in Ivy League schools, because they want to give those spots to different minorities. Too top-heavy in the Asian area.
There's this other complicating factor, which is, while it's true that black men underperform white men in the same income group, that's not true of black women. So black women overperform. So if race was the issue, why in the world is that happening? Right? So there's something
else.
Yeah,
and Thomas Sowell's pointed out that in married two income families, blacks of equal education level,
mm-hmm.
out-earn white couples.
Wow. Okay. All right. Good.
I have to trust Thomas on that one.
Right. So there's another claim that this difference in opportunity goes back generations. For example, a white person's grandparents were probably able to get loans, while a black person's grandparents were probably not. Now, okay, fine. That's
okay.
Probably true.
Okay.
That's probably true.
Yep.
But the question then becomes, does... You could say, you know, my grandparents might have had a better chance of getting a loan than somebody else's grandparents. Okay, that might be true. But now you have to prove that actually makes a difference. And trying to prove that is apparently pretty difficult, because wealth doesn't really work that way.
Wealth is kind of like businesses. They really only around for three generations.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
Because what happens is the grandparents that came from nothing and built a business now have children who witness them build this business, and their grandchildren just grew up rich.
Yeah.
And don't have an appreciation for any of it.
There's this common story that's told about family-owned businesses, that the first generation is the hard-charging, aggressive, prudent, shrewd businessman who gets the business going. And then the second generation is the maintainer. And the third generation, they've kind of lost the spark and things. You know. So,
yeah.
So this, but also this question of if your grandparents are rich, you will be rich, is simply not true when you look at the statistics.
So what you're saying is, on the flip side, because your grandparents were poor, you're destined to be poor. That's just not the American way, and is not, especially what
not
any...
Not borne out by the statistics.
And right. what any recent immigrant would say. They would be furious with that idea. Like, are you kidding me?
Yes. Yes. So there's this claim that we all have implicit bias. Biases we don't even realize that we have.
All right.
Okay. So my response to that is, white people also have invisible little fairies following them around, making things nicer for them, while black people have those invisible goblins following them around, ruining their lives. In other words, you can say invisible bias all you like, but there's no evidence for it. And you can make up these silly stories about things, but it doesn't mean that it's true, right? The saying that there's implicit bias, okay, I can say they're invisible fairies too. It doesn't make it true.
Because all you're doing is asserting these things.
Yes.
That's the problem. Now, I am not going to deny anybody their life experience.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
So, if you sense that through your life you have been, mistreated because of your race,
mm-hmm.
given preferential treatment, hassled by the cops, ignored by somebody, given better service or
right.
worse service,
right.
or you know,
and we decry all those things. We don't want anybody mistreated by the cops. We don't want anybody given worse treatment. We don't want anybody discriminated right. against by the banks. Right. None of that stuff.
But so number one, I'm not saying you know what, I can't tell you that didn't happen.
Right.
The other thing is, I could also say, in every situation, are you sure it has to do with race?
Yeah, that's the problem.
Because, so the Casey Peterson Man of the Week last week.
Yeah.
The guy who is challenging his corporation's effort to cram critical race theory down the throats of everybody that works there.
Yeah.
He ran down this interesting list of events. A lot of them have to do with interactions with cops, where if he had been black, would have been very easy for him to say, it's because I was black.
Yeah.
Right? So he's like, my brother was pulled over 14 times in 12 months when we moved into this new town. He says, you know what? He also had this screaming yellow vehicle, and he was a terrible driver. So you know what I mean? It's like,
right, yeah.
So let's just say
when you have a convenient excuse.
A black guy and a white guy both have crappy experiences with a cop.
Yeah.
A white guy walks away going, man, that guy was a dick.
Mm-hmm.
And the black guy goes, man, he only did that because I'm black. So
yeah.
So there's some...
There's some confirmation
there
bias.
There is some confirmation bias. Again, I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but what I am saying is, what do you want to do? What do you want to do with this series of feelings and anecdotes?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry, you've got feelings, but not facts.
Yeah. So imagine some guy driving around, and he thinks that he notices that some group, Indians, he thinks that he notices that Indians are cutting him off more frequently than anybody else.
Yeah.
And he starts to develop this feeling that, well, these Indians, they're always cutting me off.
Yeah.
Right. So, okay, but the fact that you think that, this anecdotal evidence that you have, doesn't mean that it's true.
Right.
And just because you feel that this is going on doesn't mean that it's actually true. And you have to have statistics. You have to do an actual. You have to measure it in a comprehensive, scientific, careful way to find out whether what's really going on. And a lot of these things just don't hold up to scrutiny.
Yeah, and like you say, now the next time that a non-Indian cuts him off, right, he may not register it.
Yeah.
That the time that an Indian lets him in front of him,
he doesn't register that
either, right? Because he's already got that in his.
Look at that! There's at least one nice Indian.
Okay.
And we're not trying to make fun of.
Here, let me give you a recent incident.
Yeah.
So I take my grandkids to the beach.
Yeah.
And I've got my Jack London,
right.
And I'm really looking forward to sitting quietly on the beach and reading this while they play in the water.
Right.
And I sit down, and you know, a half dozen young black kids come up and start playing in the water in front of me,
mm-hmm.
and they're super loud, and they're screaming and splashing like you would expect six kids from the ages of 6 to 10.
Yeah.
That's what they're there for.
Yeah, they're there to have fun.
Yeah. So I pick up my chair, and I go down about 50 feet
mm-hmm.
to a quieter spot
right.
to finish reading my book. And later on the day, I thought, what if somebody had their radar
going,
right? And they're like, look at that.
he doesn't even want to be near those black kids.
He's right. Right. And of course, not knowing the fact that two of those black kids were my grandkids.
Right.
So there's that. But I, right, so you, if you were, had your radar up always looking,
yeah,
then that would be an incident where you go, look, he can't even stand to be near them.
Right. And right. And that's a big part of the problem, it seems to me, is that people are too eager to find racism in various interactions. Where it's not, maybe it's not racism. Maybe the manager is being mean to you because you're being a jerk. Maybe yeah. Yeah. Maybe the cop pulled you over because you broke the wall. Right. Maybe, you know...
Yeah, he only pulled me over because I'm black. Your taillight's broken.
Yeah, right.
Well, yeah. They don't pull white people over for broken taillights, or,
yeah.
You know, right?
Right,
you've
yeah.
already built that into the...
So how about this one? The claim in the video that blacks with college degrees don't do as well as whites with college degrees. But okay, college degree doesn't really
mean
anything.
That's not a thing.
No. So you have engineering college degrees and you have sociology college degrees.
Right.
So in order to, for this statistic to make any sense, let's look at blacks with engineering college degrees
right.
versus whites with engineering.
Okay. From the same schools.
From the same schools.
From
the same, grade point average, all that kind of stuff. Show me that statistic. Okay, fine. Then that would make some difference. But just mixing all college degrees together, that doesn't make any sense. How about this? Systemic racism is at fault for all disparities in outcomes. Well, disparities between groups is not necessarily from bias. There are Thomas Sowell did this study of Russians coming to America and French coming to America, mm-hmm. both white, right? After a generation or two, there was a sharp difference in the wealth built up by these...
Well, the Russians did better, right?
I think the French did better.
All right.
But you can't blame this on racism.
Right.
There's something
and
else...
And his point was, if you have people from different cultures plugged into the same system, if you've already acknowledged that they're different to begin with, mm-hmm. then why would you expect the exact same outcome
right.
when they're right, when they're not applying themselves? But hold on, wait a minute. That's going to be our entire show next time.
Okay,
so we'll
right.
go to your next one.
All right, move on to it. The claim is we should all be more aware of our implicit biases. And my response is, well, of course we should. Okay. I mean, we should be monitoring ourselves to see what kind of biases we have and try to correct those things. Okay, fine. But just because you're claiming that I have an implicit bias doesn't mean that I do. Claim, legacy of slavery and Jim Crow are still a problem today.
Fast forwarding.
Yeah. So my response to that is, what about the unintended consequences of the war on poverty and other liberal social programs, which are far more recent and relevant to our current situation? Doesn't it make more sense to try to fix the bad policies that we have now rather than harping on slavery and Jim Crow? I mean, I think from what I've
so
read...
So it's 50 years, and I think... accounted for, but for inflation is like $10 trillion
spent
on the war on poverty.
Yeah.
And the war on poverty has not changed, but what has changed is crime rates are up, incarceration
yeah.
rates are up,
yeah.
fatherlessness is up. So you've got a system that discourages fathers and families. But that's not on the table for discussion.
Right. So I guess my reaction to all this kind of stuff is, obviously, I want...
I mean, I think the whole race thing actually is cover for democratic failure.
Yeah, yes, I think it is. I want everybody to have good education. I want everybody to have good prospects. I want everybody to get a good job. I don't want race to have anything to do with it. If these things are true, if it's true that we're blocking somebody, that we're disadvantaging somebody because of the color of their skin. What a stupid reason to disadvantage them. If we're doing that, absolutely let's stop it. But these arguments that keep getting thrown at us are just crap arguments. And, I can't be persuaded by this. It's just garbage. If there's actually some evidence that somebody's being discriminated against because of their race, absolutely let's stop that.
Yeah, no, I think they're kind of acknowledging that, and they're going, all right, well, we don't have that to... So now we've got to move on to a new type of racism that exists at some sub-level that even the person himself is not aware of.
Yeah.
So, but if there are no laws or policies that you want changed, then what do you want?
Right.
Right? If it's all based on feelings and anecdote, and, you know, and PhDs in...
Right.
Grammar studies.
Yeah, right.
Are we going to just scream in people's faces and burn things down until what? Until everybody is nice to each other?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the end game is.
I don't get the end game. So if we're... this is another part. If we're going to establish this impossibly vague standard of what is racial and, you know, what contributes to racial injustice, why just racial injustice? Why don't we boycott all things against all injustice? Let's protest until all people are treated fairly all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yes. Yeah, so I'm absolutely against any sort of racial discrimination. Don't want that to happen. But a lot of the stuff that I'm seeing in this systemic racism and everything, it just doesn't ring true to me. And when you examine the claims, they don't hold up.
Claims don't hold up. They can't pinpoint what the problem is or offer solutions or say what the goal is.
Right. Also, how about this? When you hear all this systemic racism stuff, what they come out with as proposed solutions are basically democratic talking points that have been tried for decades and have repeatedly failed.
Right.
Let's try something new.
HR seminars
browbeating people and
indoctrination.
Telling them that, yeah. Why don't we try, rather than trying the democratic policies that have failed over and over and over again and have made no difference and haven't helped anybody, why don't we try a different idea? And, you know, maybe school choice, maybe, you know, charter schools, maybe whatever. Or what's the opportunity zones? You know, let's try a new idea and
see if
that helps.
But they don't even offer the vague goal of racial unity.
Right.
Of like, well, one day, at least Martin Luther King style, you know,
yeah.
I'm looking for the time when black children and white children are playing together, yeah. And nobody, because now colorblindness is racist.
Yeah, this is the thing that bothers me the most, because when I was very young, the culture I grew up in was definitely racist. And as I got older into the later 70s and 80s, I thought we made substantial progress. Part of it, honestly, I think was from busing, because, you know, you were making friends with people that you weren't making friends with before.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, Crow Hill's pro busing.
Well, no. I'm not saying I'm pro busing. I'm just saying that there were some benefits to it.
All right.
Because growing up where I grew up, I didn't know a lot of black kids.
Yeah. Oh, wait. My neighborhood transitioned while I was a kid. Jeff Judge was my best friend at, like, I don't know, fourth and fifth grade.
Okay.
And, you know,
see,
like,
that wasn't my experience. Uh-huh. And so it wasn't really until after busing that I started meeting black kids and, mm-hmm. and becoming friends with them, right? So to me, I felt as if there was progress being made.
Sports is another winner.
There were a lot of things where I felt things were getting better. And I really thought that, wow, we're getting past this. And I was happy about it. And then something happened. I don't know exactly what. But something happened that made it all go...
During the Obama years,
well,
which is
unfortunate. But I would say before that. But definitely during the Obama years. But I would say before the Obama years, you had sort of this race-hustling industry. You had the Jesse Jacksons and the Al Sharptons and these
guys.
Have
you heard Al Sharpton recently?
No.
The voice of reason.
Is he?
Yeah, he's like, all right, this riding business isn't getting us anywhere.
Well, good for him.
Yeah, like, I'm like, wow, what kind of world do we live in?
Where Al Sharpton is the voice of reason? Yeah. So something went wrong, and we started going backwards. And that's what bugs me about this. This is why it keeps sticking in my craw, is I thought we were making progress.
Yeah.
And then now we've got these stupid claims, this systemic racism garbage, and all this other stuff that gets thrown in our faces, and I'm so sick of it.
Yeah, So my feeling on the matter is, since you have proposed nothing, that by systemic you mean it is so deep in the system that we live in,
right,
and in me or and every single white person mm-hmm. who, you know, doesn't consider themselves racist, don't have people who think that they're racist, don't do things or say things that are racist, that none of that matters. That's not good enough. Or, because you cannot get out of this. It is so deeply ingrained in you that there's nothing you can do, no matter how many... If you get a black girlfriend and four black friends, that's you just trying to cover for your racism.
Yeah.
So if all things, all the time, are racist, I'd be like, well...
We're done here.
We're done here. There's nothing that can be changed, and I'm going to feel free to get on with my life and never give this issue five more minutes of my time.
Yeah.
Is that where you're going with this systemic racism, or you want to see just a lot of apologizing? Does that help? I got to give you some money.
I don't know what helps. I don't know what helps for people who've bought into this.
Yeah. So I said, there's no relationship at all to the civil rights movement. That was pinpointing the things that they didn't like and what they wanted access to, and were able to achieve it. Good
yes,
job.
Yes, that was good. All right, so the good old Genesius Times, which is a competitor to the Babylon Bee. They're not quite as good as Babylon Bee, but they're pretty good.
In its satire.
Yes. Genesius Times said, breaking, millions of immigrants of color risk their lives to become victims of systematic racism in the United States.
So it's a picture of like a caravan, you know, coming up from Honduras or whatever to try to get into the United States. Do you think that's what they're thinking? Do you think that they're
I don't think they're
going, I won't ever have a chance to improve my life in the United States.
That's why I'm going there.
But I'm going to risk my life for it anyway.
Right. Yeah. Many countries try to keep people in. You know, we have to try to keep people out.
Yeah. I remember this one when they're talking about the border wall, and some woman was from East Germany going, I know what walls are like. I'm like, all right, you don't get the difference between a wall to keep people in and keep people out.
Those were the prison walls.
Kind of different walls.
They were keeping you in. Yeah. All right. So I think it's time to get to our man of the week.
Yes.
And this is. Example of good old toxic masculinity.
Here. Yes.
Firefighter rappels down Harlem building to save women.
Jeez.
And the building is on fire, and this woman is scared, and she goes out onto
the... I guess they can't get onto the floor to go through the door or whatever. The fire is between her and the window or whatever.
Yeah. So they're trying to put the fire out. This woman's scared, and she goes out to the balcony, and she's kind of hanging on for dear life and afraid that she's not gonna make it. And good old Brian Quinn rappels off the off the roof, comes down and gets a hold of her and rescues her.
That's amazing stuff.
I know. There's toxic masculinity.
Well, my nephew sent me a picture meme thing. So there's a guy up to his thighs in flooded streets like in Louisiana.
Right.
In his arms is a woman. Right. And in her arms is a toddler.
Right.
And underneath it says, toxic masculinity. When the shit hits the fan, no one's looking for a feminist.
That's right. And firefighters are tough dudes, and they risk their lives regularly to save people.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian Quinn. You are the man. Well done.
Well done.